This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Brewski, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
I'm going to start with this. I don't know anyone who protects a predator other than a predator. And yet that's exactly what we've watched happen for decades at the highest levels of power. Virginia Giuffre's voice was supposed to be buried with her, but it's louder now than ever, rattling the walls of governments, law firms, boardrooms that swore they knew nothing. Today, we're with the former FBI Special Agent Robin Drake, former Chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. We're pulling back the curtain on how predators protect each other, why the system still shelters them, and what happens when silence becomes a survival instinct. This isn't about conspiracy. It's about psychology, about the psychology of power, leverage, and fear. And if you think it ends with Epstein, you are not paying attention. Robin, welcome. And Robin, I want to start here. When you hear the phrase, predators protect predators, what does it mean behaviorally?
I tell you, Tony, I'm so glad we're covering this one. Yet this is a rough one. I mean, it's hard not to get tear-jerked when looking at this book, covering this book, and when I hear predators protecting predators. You know what my first response is? What? Mm-hmm. And because this is such, out of everything we covered, believe it or not, this is one of the most hardest things I think for us to understand, because it's contemplative, systemic, horrendous behavior over long periods of time. And so when predators are protecting predators, I always just got to look at, all right, what are the fundamentals of human behavior? And that is control, power, feeling safe. And so predators protecting predators is really about people protecting their own mindset and their own mind think about how screwed up the world is around them. So they want to surround themselves in that echo chamber so they can keep going with that abhorrent behavior. Granted, they don't think it is. But if you get in that chamber where you have other predators around you thinking the same thing, yes. And the key here is to always remember, none of these predators are doing it for the other person, because that would require empathy. That would require a bit of altruism about taking care of someone else. None of them are doing that. It is all extremely narcissistic, self-serving. Again, it's a term of art, narcissism. I don't know because I'm not a licensed clinician, but it is extremely, extremely self-serving, and it's the most toxic thing we can possibly see.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating to try and jump behind the mind here of this. We're going to try and do that today. Because, I mean, it's simple to look at this and go, these are horrible, horrendous human beings. They are. But how do they operate and operate in such public arenas in front of all of us? And even when we see them, I mean, we have a very bizarre ability as human beings who are not predators to make excuses for them, to have some sort of ways of rationalizing that this person's behavior over here doesn't influence this over here. It's bizarre because the behavior is so abhorrent. It's about as bad as it gets, you know, next to murder. I think some could argue it's even worse. But we, as a society, even when we know about it, we're just like, well, you know, I mean, the examples that come to my mind would be like some obvious ones, R. Kelly. You know, for right. example, you know, we knew what the hell he was doing. We saw the tape came out. There he is in his home. I mean, there's a freaking Soul Train award in the background and he's there with a child and everybody's like, well, maybe it was this, maybe it was that. It's like, it's him. It's him in the video. This is his house. Clearly it is his house. There's his award. And he had an even more successful stretch of his career after all of that came out. I mean, it's really fascinating the way that we can kind of compartmentalize these people on the outside. And I don't want to say we're protecting them as a society, but is it because the truth is just too dark and our brains just can't quite contemplate how one could actually be doing these sort of things to others? So in a way, we act as if they're not?
There's a lot of reasons and a lot of data points on this one. You know, so when you take someone of celebrity and notoriety, a lot of times we don't want to believe it. And so we're going to rationalize away what we're seeing, because if we acknowledge the fact that these people that we might have idolized and might set up on a pedestal and we admired, to say they're doing these abhorrent things would invalidate our own ability to see the world accurately around us. And so that goes against how we see the world and how we see ourselves. And so we're reluctant to do those things. So imagine this, you know, we love doing these thought experiments because it really helps us understand deeper. Remove, like R. Kelly, great example, remove his title, name, or position from that entire scenario and ask yourself, if you saw that behavior from someone that you didn't know, would your action be different? Yes. And so that's definitely part of the data points on it. And also, you know, we all experience this in our lives as well. You know, the vast majority of people do fall within the normal parameters of human behavior. We all have trauma. We've all had experiences. But very rarely have we, unless we're part of this culture and part of this world, have we been exposed to it at that personal one-on-one level. And so because we haven't, we don't have an exposure to it. And so we can't believe it's true, or we just saw it in a movie. Or a lot of times the worst thing some people will do is that, oh, they must all just be in, it's that group of people. It's all condoned. It's, see what I mean? So people will do all these amazing things to rationalize away horrendous things they're seeing because they don't want to believe it. Because again, it hurts how we see the world around us. It hurts our self-image. It is hard to explain, but it's never just one thing that is causing it.
Yeah.
So why do we give celebrities a pass? Why do we, sorry, Tony, I'm invoking Michael Jackson because I just heard Thriller.
I was thinking of Jared from Subway too.
Well,
yeah, I mean, they're all coming back to me now.
Well, when we have these great, and Stacey, and to your point, you know, when we have these great, you know, rags to riches stories, or not even rags to riches, or just these great stories that we want to believe, we don't want to have it crashed around us because, again, it invalidates how we see people, how we see others, and our own ability to assess. We always want to believe the best in ourselves. We want to believe that we're really good at discerning crazy from not crazy. But the reality is, no. So this is where just it's okay to be honest. It's okay to be fallible. And if you see something that's off, you know, one of the greatest things we can have as a human being is humility to say, oops, I was wrong there. You know, we really need to have some deeper curiosity of what the hell's that? We've got to dive deeper on that. You know, the longer you do things like this and the longer you work with people, the more you realize you're never 100% right. And you can't be right all the time. But what you should see is recognizing someone in something that is deviating from a norm of what we expect to see, because that's what it is, too. We expect to see an arc. Because this is what they're really, I mean, just think about this. Celebrities and people of notoriety are really, and most people on TikTok and everything right now, are really great at posting that 5-second highlight reel of their lives.
Yeah.
And so we start believing the 5-second highlight reel is that arc. And so it gets harder and harder to believe. There's a major spike from what we think we're going to see and expect. Because again, and then we fall into the realm of, well, it must not be right because it's a deviation. No, you're only seeing such a small glimmer. That's why I continually be open to the data point you're seeing, and also be discerning of them as well, because people can come at you and people can try to discredit. I mean, there's so many things that come in. That's why I go back to what we said a couple shows ago. Use the word maybe.
Yeah. I mean, what you're saying, I mean, it goes against how we see the world around us. I mean, we're not good at accepting the world around us. We want to go with this vision that we have for it, or what we've told ourselves, or what we've been told. Is that like an evolutionary problem? Are we just not very evolved and very good at seeing our surroundings in for what they actually are? I don't know. I'm fascinated by this. I don't know. I'm not shocked by anything anymore. I mean, I think all of us kind of feel that way to a certain extent. I think I kind of feel numb to a certain extent of just the amount of figures that, you know, we thought were good and pure and philanthropists and this and that. And then it turns out like, oh shit, like all this isn't true. I feel like I personally I don't have any problem seeing the world of what is around me. I have no problem saying I'm wrong or that what I thought was correct is incorrect. I like that. That is a freeing thing. It seems very youthful. It seems very emotionally immature to look at the world in any other way. Is this a problem of emotional maturity that we as a society are we kind of we're very stunted as a whole, or at least in massive amounts of people are, and a very small percentage is able to kind of see through the blinders and is able to realize, no, this shit is crazy. But then when you raise your hand and say it before anybody else is saying it, you get shot down. You get shut down. Nobody wants to hear what reality might be, even if it is very dark.
It's a really great question. Anytime we start talking about our evolution and us as a species, I really love it because it really helps us explain and understand what's going on and what we're seeing and observing. Believe it or not, we are really, really good as a species, not as good as some animals in the kingdom, of seeing things that spike out of the norm of what we expect to see, because we are constantly baselining the world around us for what purpose? To feel safe. And as the Homo sapiens we are really, really skilled at controlling our environment around us, or at least trying to feel safe. We control our food sources, we control our shelter, we control fire, we control all these things so we can provide and we have offspring. And in order to control the world, in order to control threats, we're very good at seeing what stands out from normal. That is a very pragmatic, objective thinking brain. And the way that you're just describing yourself, Tony, and we all try to do this is, and we all think we're doing this, is we're objective seeing data coming in. We see data come in, we assess what is cause and effect, and that's why we can move forward. And this is what we're doing. We're doing investigations and where we're doing assessments like this. But what happens is that's the higher functioning brain we all have. When you're talking about these other reactions that people are having, you're dealing with emotional reactions. Emotional reactions is the lower thinking brain. When people are reacting emotionally, that is, emotional regulation is low. And we've talked about this numerous times. You know, when it comes to emotional intelligence, EQ, one of five facets of emotional intelligence is our emotional regulation. And so when we are emotionally reacting to something, which is the fight or flight that kicks in, and defensiveness, all these things where we get emotionally hijacked, that is our lower thinking brain engaging. And that's why we're subjected to chaos. And so what does social media do right now? What's TikToks, Instagram, Facebook, everything, all the social networking platforms, typically they're getting you to react emotionally to things because that sells ad space. And so but as a species, we're extremely capable of it. It's just a matter of how do we get that engaged? And we get it engaged by asking, what went on here? What's going on? What's the cause and effect? Asking those what questions. When we start asking why questions, why did this person do this? Then we get very subjective. When we get the subjective brain going, there's lots of opinions, and opinions tend to not be as focused on facts. Can be, but they're influenced by emotions. Keep to the what questions. What specifically happened? What was the outcome they were seeking? What caused them to do this? And because again, it keeps that cognitive, thoughtful brain engaged.
Yeah.
Could it be that there's just evil people? I mean, is this the purest form of evil that we've seen?
So it's interesting when you and a lot of people will attach the label of evil to things and acts and everything. And let's do a thought experiment. Here's the challenge. As a species, we are evolved into what we are because of our belief systems that allow us to move beyond 150 in a tribe to more collective things, which is our religion, our beliefs, our ethics, our morals. All these things allow us to collect them together. And in order to do that, we created a word like evil because it keeps us in fear. When we fear evil, it keeps us corralled as a species. And that's not to say there isn't evil. I'm just saying that it's a word that people will use. But the universe is just being what the universe is. And you'll have two sides of the coin on this. You have people that'll say, yes, people are born evil or do evil acts. And then you'll have people that are anthropologists coming in and scientists coming in and say, well, here's the cause and effect of the genetics and biology that happened and the nature and nurture part that happened earlier on in life. And they're just formed in this horrendous soup of bad. And they weren't born evil. They were just created, unless you're dealing with a Koberger type. So, so long answer to your question, Stacey, is I really think it depends on how you see the world and the universe. It can be evil to some people. It can be a really horrendous mix of bad genetics and biology and experiences that created in others. So I think all of it above.
It is the way that these figures are protected amongst their circles. Is this a uniquely American problem? Is this the way that we see it, or is this, does this sort of thing go on everywhere around the world? I mean, does it vary culturally in terms of how we interact with one another, with our societies? You know, in other cultures similar to us seem to have similar issues. Does it have to do with the way that we live our lives, with the societies that we have and where we live?
That's a really good question, too. So let's do a paintbrush first.
Yeah.
Paintbrush, my initial response is no, because we are all Homo sapiens. It doesn't, you know, us as a species doesn't distinguish between anything. We are just all genetically coded for the same vulnerability, same impact of the world around us, our genetics, biology, and all that thing. Social status and social situations will fuel it or tamp it down. I would think, when you think about us in the United States and what we're facing here, there are potentially some accelerators that can throw fuel on a fire of someone that is more inclined to it than less inclined to it. That might not happen another place in the world. And the only reason I say it is because our laws and our constitution and the things that we have for penalties for people tend to be lower here than in other cultures. Believe it or not, people who think we're so oppressive, I mean, seriously, just travel anywhere in the Middle East.
Sure.
You'll see that. No, I mean, so remember this: fear is the greatest motivator human beings have from doing bad things. And in our country, the fear of being caught for that here compared to the fear of being caught and having parts of your body lopped off from other countries is much higher. And so, as a species, it's universal. As nation states, I think it will probably vary depending on motivations put in place by penal codes and also the amount of people that you can collectively get in a place that can get in that horrible group think. But with the advent of these horrendous online sites and the dark web and the ability to travel, it has spread more around the world, I think, globally than it used to be able to.
And what's very disturbing about Virginia Giuffre's book and the whole Epstein list and everything is, you know, in our worlds, we think a lot of times we think of predators as, oh, they're out on the dark web. They're these creepy people that are hiding behind computers, you know, in their parents' basement or whatever it may be, that are they're the scum of society, and obvious scum of society too. But they're not. I mean, what we're talking about here in this case is leaders of the world, you know, business leaders, country leaders, things of that nature, people that are not, they do not fit that profile whatsoever, but something in them at some point said, "Oh, this is okay for me to do." And what makes it even more disturbing is it wasn't just hidden, you know, in some hotel room, in some one-off thing that no one's going to find out about. I mean, we're talking about Epstein. We're talking about Epstein Island. People like literally traded these teenage girls as currency. And they had to collectively come together and say, "Yeah, let's do all this together. Let's go over to Jeff's place." And because I just, my mind, it's hard to wrap my mind around how this conversation even begins. How one is if you have nothing going on in that world, you're not a predator, you haven't done anything, and then somehow you get roped into it in some way, shape, or form because of the people that you end up being around or surrounding yourself with for whatever you're doing in life. That, to me, is such a weird concept of like, well, I never tried that before. This seems like a great idea. I mean, where the hell? I mean, where does that come from? I mean, it's just baffling to me how one could go from not being that to then getting entangled in this sort of stuff and becoming a frequent flyer on the Lolita Express.
Well, and let me interject something here. You know, there had to be people in this orbit. And this is both political sides have been caught up in this web. You know, there are people on the periphery going, you're going where? You're doing what? They know about this. What made them turn a blind eye? What made them go, all right, well, you go do whatever it is you're doing over there this weekend? I mean,
well, I want to talk about that, but I want to talk about the actual interaction first, because I do want to hear, I want to talk about that angle of the folks that are surrounding it, but I want to talk about what I was saying first, is the actual almost like recruiting, if you will, of someone to join the club.
So to me, it's unlocking the darkness from within. I think it's the best way that I can really kind of think about it. And so I'm going to take it to my world of spy recruiting. And because there's a lot of similarity here, as much as people are groomed into being trafficked through shame and manipulation tactics, what's happening on the other end to potentials is it always starts with a question. A very softball type question. And the question, so in my world of recruiting intelligence officer, you know, one of the ways I would start testing whether this individual was willing to break a rule that they had in place, like an intelligence officer that I'm trying to recruit that's working on behalf of a foreign nation, they were not allowed to have outside employment outside of their diplomatic duties. And so I would then use sources of people around them and myself, if I had an interaction, of asking about some of their challenges, priorities, and pain points in life, and ask them what kind of things they're willing to do in order to make those things happen. In other words, hey, I have an opportunity to make some money on the side for you and your family, if that's, you know, if that's something you think you're comfortable doing. And then based on that reaction, so here's what I would do. Even if they said no, but I'd sit there like this for a second and thought about it. Oh, you're thinking about it. They're thinking about going down a darker path, a more challenging path, a path that had a little more danger in it in order to service a priority and need in their life. And so now we flip it to the Epstein type group of people. So when you sensitize, because I call it sensitizing your environment towards an end goal you're seeking, you have someone like Epstein or Giselle or whoever say, hey, we're going to be having a party this weekend at the place. And, you know, you can come at two different times. You can come when we have, it's just going to be this one group. But if you're able to make it for this one, we're going to have so-and-so-and-so. And we're actually going to have some of our younger women there. You know, so you don't even say that. You just kind of sensitize them towards who the audience is going to be, who the attendees are going to be. Watch reaction. And so
it's a test.
I think it's all a test. So, again, I don't know it. I only know from the spy recruitment side. But to me, the way that they start seeing who wants to join this club is who is going to give it a thought of who they want to be. Now, see, people like us, I hear that you're going to do that, and I'm sharing what is going on in my life to my loving critics. And my loving critics say to me, what the hell are you, nuts? You don't go there. What the hell has that got to do with anything? Why would those people be there? Stay away from that crazy. Now, people that don't know. And then they're just going, and so it's a slight grooming and testing to who might be willing to entertain the thought of that.
And I want to go to Stacey's point about that, where the surrounding folks normalize it, where it's it's like, oh, and like, you know what's going on over there, but you really don't, and you're going to tell yourself it's something else, but it's not. That's the other angle where, okay, because it's not just the circle of the people who are actionably doing these horrible things to people. It's the infrastructure around it, the people who may not necessarily be participating in the act, but allowing that infrastructure to thrive and allowing it to go on, even without necessarily a threat of of them being exposed for something. That it's just is it more just of an ease of operation of, well, we kind of need this person here for this, so whatever they're doing over there, I don't need to know about, and I'm just going to pretend it's not happening. That seems to be a weird way of thinking, but it seems to be, how these sort of structures flourish.
So social proof is a huge part of all these things. And when one person, matter of fact, even in her book, she starts out by saying, you know, when one guy was picking her up on the side of the road, when she just left being raped, there's another girl in the car waving her in saying, it's okay to come on in. So just using social proof in these situations will do just that. And so say you have someone that is, in, to your point, is in this circle, but not the close, darker circle. I mean, it's so much easier to really think about how Diddy was doing his white parties, right?
Yeah. Yes.
And then after a certain point, people get kicked out because, you know, we had our special club, but until then, everyone is kind of on the peripheral. And this is kind of the social proof. It was going on and you're part of it. It was, but not really, because so here's what a healthier person is doing that might be there, but questioning, hey, what's going on here? What are they going to see? They're going to see social proof by, hey, all these high powered people don't seem to have a problem with what's going on and who's there. So it must be okay. And right. Then if they see the younger ladies there, they're going to be looking for cues from them. And if they've been trained and groomed to behave a certain way, what are they going to see from them? That they're happy, they're go-lucky, they're happy to be there, and they're so grateful that they're having these opportunities. You know, whatever they've been told and scripted to do in that environment to give that facade of, oh, this must be okay. I must be the wrong one that's wrong. Because again, if they're kept from talking to each other mm-hmm. about what they're seeing, it's easier to just... oh, it must be okay. You know, how many times have everyone said that at some point in their life? It must be okay because they all think it.
Right.
And when you have people that have a lot of power and you're like, oh, well, they're participating in this. Oh, well, that must be okay. I mean, I guess that's how some will filter it through their brains. What's, I guess, another kind of just hard to wrap your mind around, there's a healthy mind around, is it the more these people have to lose, the darker their shit gets? Because, I mean, if you're thinking of the creep in the basement, you know, preying on people that way, you know, they have nothing to lose. They're already pretty much at rock bottom in life. Mm-hmm. But you have these people who are literally at the top of the world, where if this were to be exposed, if someone were to find out what the hell you're doing, I mean, or does that not even run through their mind? Is it just this feeling of infallibility that no one's ever going to find these things out that enables them, is somewhere in their mind to say, well, I got nothing to worry about, nothing to lose. I have nothing to worry about because if there's just no way of being caught, we're so insulated here. I mean, is it because they've been insulated for so long and we're finally in a culture where we're exposing this sort of shit and not just going, well, you know, men will be men and writing it off as we have basically through almost all of history. This is kind of a new thing that we're verbally saying, yeah, this is not okay. This is a relatively new concept to say predatory behavior towards anyone is not an acceptable thing to do.
It's probably one of the only benefits of social media right now is that a lot more is getting exposed and a lot of people are able to take videos and photos of things that otherwise were able to be hidden. There's a lot of things that are going on in there that are causing this. I think in most of these cases, they think they're inoculated against repercussions because of the powerful people around them. You know, Diddy, I think, is the greatest example of someone who felt like he created his own nation state with his own laws. And that's what a lot of these people are doing. They're not subjected to anything. I mean, Epstein had his own island. I don't have a law. It's my island. I can do what I want. It's my island. It's my law. And the other thing, too, here, I think is really, really important to keep in mind. And because you use that word, I can't remember the word you used, Tony, wealthy, rich, or no, successful.
Okay.
No, yeah. They're not. So they're defining success by materialism. And how many of them are happy? They keep doing this because they're caught up in this And what they're trying to get these dopamine hits from these abhorrent actions, because that's what they've been taught is actually it. When actually the greatest thing you can actually do is just have a great, healthy conversation with someone. And so they get caught up in this maelstrom of, I got to do this to get more, to get more, get more, get more, because they keep seeking this high that is just fleeting from them because they've misdefined how to do it because they got such broken brains.
Yeah. Where does the breaking start? I mean, I can understand the psychology of the women who are victimized in this, of very, you know, being victimized right. at a very young age. And I can understand how that can lead into the path of how they end up, you know, where they end up. And it's sad and it's heartbreaking. I can understand, but like, the victimizers, the ones that are doing the horrible things to these people, where does that start? Where that's another broken brain right there. That's thinking that is, yeah. you know, an acceptable thing to do that. I'm going to guess it's not something that suddenly, you know, flips at age 35 and you're like, oh shit, well, I'm going to go be a predator. I'm going to guess you've probably always been a predator from a very formative age.
Well, and probably nobody stepped in and said, this is not acceptable behavior and stopped it. Doesn't that seem possible?
It's all accurate. What happens is at a very young age, you know, someone defined for you what success is. And if you're defined at a young age, you're in those formative years of 9 to 19, 24, before the prefrontal lobe, and you're told that success is power and control, title and position, and service of self rather than service of others, and you are witnessing these behaviors around you, and you're witnessing behaviors of people with money and power and accolades, and they were telling you, I'm successful, I'm happy, and now you're told that you're supposed to pursue happy and that this is what happy is and this is what success is. You then get caught up in that maelstrom of doing that thing. And that's why we start chasing it. It's such an interesting challenge. The studies are really solid on this. The fact that, you know, capitalism is the most successful methodology for the progress of our species and actually getting rid of great wrongs in the world. But then because socialism can always turns dark and bad. In all the experiments that they've done throughout the world. But at the same time, though, there's a lot of excesses that come because of capitalism, because of the power, because of the control. And so that's why regulations seem to fail it a lot. But it's this is exactly where it starts. It starts with a young age. People are groomed, not groomed in a negative, but just groomed, like growing the thinking that this is what success and happiness comes from, power and control. Again, I keep going back to this control thing. It is such part of our species to control. And when control goes excessive, because remember, our brains reward us for a certain amount of control because it allows us to feel safe. But at the same time, control to excess becomes narcissism. And if you are edging anywhere up on that sliding scale of psychopathy where you start lacking empathy and you objectify a human being, you rationalize your behavior towards others for yourself, and you can rationalize because you're doing it for a greater good, oh my God, that's where chaos ensues. And so it does come from a younger age. But here's the good part of it too. I've seen many people, and myself included, you know, I thought leadership was a much different thing than it evolved into being throughout my life. And a leadership is literally just a life of service and not of self. And I think what a lot of people at an early age get indoctrinated into is that leadership and power and happiness is in service of self. And that's where I think a lot of these important behaviors are growing into.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.